Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Gravé, Susan Wright, and Matt Spaeth, revealing the truth about the food we eat.
Hello, and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gravé, and I'm here with one of my co-hosts, Matt Spaeth. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Carol.
Great to have you on the show with me today, and I know you and I are pretty excited about this show because we love talking about permaculture. And our guest today is Felicia Alongi. Did I pronounce
that right? Alongi, right? Cowden, yes. Yay, great. That's an Italian name. Uh-huh.
From the beautiful island of Kauai. And Felicia is one of the founders of a project called Akamai Backyard on the beautiful island of Kauai. And Akamai Backyard is a project that Felicia co-created that is a wonderful example of permaculture for the backyard-sized garden. They do things like they have edible landscape, water catchment, renewable energy. And I think, Felicia, one of the things that amazed me the most about the Akamai Backyard is that you created this backyard in 1 year, and it was a really great example of what people can do. So welcome to the show, Felicia.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience for me to have and a very empowering one.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It really helped me to feel better about a lot of things that are going on in the world.
Great. So tell us a little bit about what the Akamai project is and Akamai Backyard.
Okay, and just for our listeners who aren't from Hawaii or who don't know the meaning of the word Akamai, that means intelligence or common sense in Hawaiian. And I have had a small homeschool program, like between 6 and 12 students, depending on the year. And so we studied some of the problems in the world. It got a little depressing, and then I took a permaculture class, and we thought, well, let's just try and see what we can do in our own yard. And so we called it Akamai Backyard because it is a backyard that makes sense, but it also, it's Akamai Learning doing it. And as we, you know, it really was even less than a year, like within 4 months we were eating pretty regularly out of the garden, the yard. It's actually, we call it a yarden. We have food forests planted all around the edge of our one-third of an acre. And so really under cultivation, because there's a house and there still is yard space, it's probably one-ninth of an acre. And it is shocking how much food is produced on that.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, you know, let's start at the very beginning for some of our listeners. What is permaculture?
Permaculture is kind of a new word for an old way of knowing how to work with the land. Permaculture, I think it comes from permanent agriculture. And that's long-lasting agriculture. And any place in the world where people lived, surely they had it wired, where you're getting all your inputs right from there. The Polynesians were masters at it. We're in one of the most isolated places in the entire planet. The archipelago of Hawaii is more isolated than any other landmass, and we're the most isolated island. And so with permaculture, you use what's on your land right there to keep it going. And we have a rainwater catchment system that's very simple to use. We don't have to utilize it too much because of how we plant it, but we basically grow our yard on ambient sun and rain. We have, last I counted, like 32 or 33 animals with names on them. One of them passed away yesterday, though, so we're down to 32. And those animals, their own little waste, like from our tilapia pond, our turtle pond, our chickens, our bunnies, those are what feed what I call the micro herd, which is the most important element in our yard, and that's the mycelium, the worms, and the microbes, and they do all the work. But by having encouraged really healthy microherd or microorganisms in the yard. We can talk about that a little bit, but they are fed by the animals in there through their waste products and their activities on the land. And that feeds the plants, and the plants feed us, and the plants feed the animals and other things. We have lots of volunteers around too. So what we have done is managed to really create a full cycle. And it's now 2 years old. And so it doesn't take much weeding, watering, or work. My joke is I'm sort of the lazy princess, and so it's my lazy princess's guide to gardening, to be able to have nature do the work. And I have so much gratitude for all those microorganisms and all the elements that do the work for us. And it's been so empowering. And one of the jokes I used to have about myself is that I'm anything but a green thumb. I was kind of a hordo sadist. I didn't quite kill plants. I just kept them on the edge of existence. And now my yard is so rocking, and I got wild crazy hair myself personally, and my yard has wild crazy hair. It's, you know, lima beans growing everywhere, lily kois coming off of things. We have a squash called chayote squash. I've got probably 80 or 90 of them dripping around the yard right now. Another really big piece of our success, and it is in alignment with the concept of permaculture, that anybody anywhere would, you know, could utilize in their own region, and that is to look to what plants grow naturally there. If I was trying to really focus on plants that are meant for Massachusetts or Colorado or something, some of them would work, but I'd have to work hard to have them thrive. And so what we've focused on is the Southeast Asian plants and the Polynesian plants, and they just grow wild. They grow really, really effectively. So, and I have
You've
to
say, you've got a lot of great plants down there.
We have a lot of great plants. I mean, being successful in Kauai, especially on the north shore of Kauai, in some ways is the low-hanging fruit. Because my yard gets about 90 inches of rain, 75 on a dry year. So that's really helpful, and we have a lot of sunshine, and it never freezes. So I know that we have it easy. What we probably lack a little bit, and I don't know enough about every place on the mainland. I know Oregon has really got powerful soil. When people from the mainland come to Hawaii, they get a little frustrated at how volcanic our soil is.
Right.
But I don't know any different. So, you know, I don't know to know that that's a problem.
So
it doesn't feel like a problem to me.
So is the soil of Kauai, I know the Big Island is very volcanic, but the soil of Kauai has a similar volcanic property to it?
It does, but, very big but, is and our island is twice as old. I believe we're 10 million years old, and they're 5 million years old, and in geologic time, that's not that long, but we have a whole lot more topsoil. There's no place here that sort of looks like the moon the way Kona does.
Right.
We have a lot more soil, and I live in Kilauea, so I'm up, 300-400 feet above the sea, so I don't have a whole lot of sand. But when I first started doing stuff with my property, I bought a piece that used to be part of the plantation, the sugar plantation, and it was the machinist for the cane company lived there. And so it was a heavy industrial use, and so when I moved on there, the soil was just shiny. And it had been poisoned and poisoned and poisoned. And I had some of it scraped off, and I did some things to try and make it a little bit better. But until I took that class, I didn't really know how to make it better. And a few really key things that we have done is, well, one number one thing, I don't ever throw away green waste. Everything is useful. You get to where you just love your green waste, and you might even borrow some from the neighbors. I have brought in, over the past couple of years, a few truckloads of horse manure from the riding stables close by. I also have a mushroom guy down the street. It's called Kauai Fungi. And so I get their old mushroom kits, and I have put a lot of them around the soil, around the yard. We dig trenches. I call them lasagna trenches. When we first started planting, along the edges, I dug about 18 inches deep and layered it. We call it lasagna trenching, lasagna layers, and made sure I had a lot of organic matter in there. So I did a few things to jumpstart it. It used to be if I had to bury an animal or try and dig a hole, I'd need a pick, and really I need a strong guy in there with that pick. And now my soil is really loamy, and I can almost just dig with my hands. And so the soil has come alive. And it, you know, it just makes me so happy. It's really brought my whole way I look at the world up, because I figure if in that short a time I could heal a hard piece of earth where I never would have thought that I could have so much food, you know, we can do a lot to heal our planet, our country, to regain some of our sovereignty community by community. There's almost a political / spiritual element to permaculture and the gardening. It's a very freeing process.
Yeah, I can see that, and having the children involved too is got to be pretty magical, to have them learn and to grow their own food and be part of it. That's got to be really exciting.
Yeah, and like my younger son, the one who's in our film, and for the listeners, we have a film on our website. It's Akamai Backyard, AKAMAIBackyard.com. There's a 14-minute film in there. There's a shorter trailer on YouTube. My younger son, he really likes to cook. And we have gotten spoiled in the house. We pick everything. Like, if I harvested something yesterday, it feels old to eat it today. You know, we get really, probably 70% of our food comes out of the yard. If we needed to, we could certainly survive off it. There's things like oils and, you know, the kids like bread or rice, those things, wheat and things like that. That's not something easy to grow, but we could do without it. But my younger son, he's a better cook than me, and he'll kind of scold at me like I picked the wrong kind of basil, or, you know, which kind of oregano goes with which oils.
That's
great. I don't
great.
Really even think about it, you know. It's like, oh, you know, you realize you need a lemon, you could just go out and you grab a lemon. You're putting a smoothie together, you throw some coconut milk in there. You know, it's second nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I like seeing that. That's pretty exciting.
That's great.
Yeah.
So
how do you get started in this course? And what are the
how
first
did I get
few steps you took? Yeah.
Well, I will tell you very briefly what my motivation was. We had, and then I'll tell you, and then I just took a class. I'll tell you how I got into the class. But that particular year, which was the 2008 year, and the way my school is basically free, I am an investor. I don't have a lot of money, but I am what you would call a subprime lender. I like to think of myself as a benevolent lender. But I was anticipating the bank crisis. You know, in my opinion, that was an orchestrated event. And so with my students that year, we were following the elections and we were following the banking crisis. And I had one student with four brothers in active duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. So we were just seeing all this really hard, hard realities. And we do field trips every Friday and we go to the landfill, the power station, the water treatment plant for both making fresh water and for dealing with sewage. We go to all our infrastructure pieces, and it's a really, really good thing to do. And food distributors, but the kids were hearing, and I was hearing things that, like the food distributor, and it really the kindest of voices, he said, oh, yours is the sad generation. And he went on to explain how his family had the food distribution service for more than three generations, and how he explained all the shipping and all the problems and how expensive everything was, and that in their young adulthood they could expect to anticipate some serious food shortages. And when we went to the fuel distributor, the guy who owned the distribution company, he came in and he sat and he talked to them, and when they first came in, he said, "This is not your fault, but this is your problem." And he explained about the futures market, and he did this really powerful explanation on oil and what it is to be at the very end of the shipping line, and that we really aren't an important consumer here, as well as the difficulties to being a distributor. So we were all getting a little down. And, you know, the kids are kind of losing motivation. And I went to a seed exchange. I'm now on the board of an organization called Regenerations, and we have these big seed and plant exchanges every quarter. We're going to do another one on 9/11, by the way, to celebrate the 10-year anniversary in a really positive way. But it's a big free, hundreds of people come and everybody's plant sharing. And I learned about a permaculture class, a two-week class that had just been organized about 3 weeks earlier than that. A wonderful guy named Skeeter Pilarski. I don't know if you know him. He's from Washington State. And he came over and he taught us. And I just went. I listened. I learned. I went, okay, well, I'll try that. You know, and I just did what they said. You know, I didn't, like, have a lot of background. And I just did what we learned in class. And guess what? It worked. So
wow.
We were thrilled.
Were the kids excited about the whole project?
They were, but they got way more excited when they saw how fast things grow, because when we did what I think the technical term is, it's like a European word, hugel culture. It's these trenches where you really load it up. You load up the trench like a forest floor and you build it up. And we planted plants, and some of those things, like our cassava plants and our pigeon peas, they were 8 to 12 feet high in 4 months and have just blooming and bursting out all over the place. We had sunflowers everywhere. Everything grew so fast. We could literally sit and watch things grow. And we had some plants we could literally watch them bloom. And so that was pretty awe-inspiring. And then when you cook it and it tastes great, well, that was really exciting too. So, yeah, the kids had a lot of fun with it. We all did. And when we made that film, I know when I took the class, had been reading in Mother Earth News, there was something about a place called, they made a film called Homegrown Revolution. It's a place in Pasadena. And they did something similar. They have a 6,000 square foot home in Pasadena, and they did urban homesteading on it, and it really motivated me. It gave me the idea. And I showed it to the kids, and they were like, they had their mouths like, oh, I don't get it, because they couldn't understand anger at the Vietnam War. They couldn't understand anger at the government. They were kind of stuck on the fashion elements and things like that. So I thought, well, they missed that point, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So we made a film that is really by 12-year-olds, for 12-year-olds, and lots of other ages can enjoy it, but I tried to make it not be about the bummers. It's in there a little bit, but it's kind of sandwiched in there, and it's not the main focus. I tried to make a story that tells the joy that we really feel, and it was transformative, and honestly, I was a little bit angry before I had this change in my yard. I was angry. I felt like, how come we're set up this bad? How come, you know, we don't learn more that we are, like, you know, on our island, we have about a 3-day supply of food, and we live in one of the most abundant places on the planet. We're so tied in to the system.
Right.
So, and we talked about that. Well, what is it to be tied into the system, and why should we be dependent and things like that? But, you know, I'm 5'2 and about 110 pounds. I'm 48. I'm not strong. I've never been somebody who really works with tools. I did have some people help, the kids help, but these are kids that don't have their strength and size. We had, I consider it a mosaic of our friends. Different people come in and they help here or there. but there weren't any machines in there, and it just really wasn't that hard. You just have to decide that you want to do it. I know what I want to say to the listener, because this is like, I'm always evangelizing gardening. I want to get a cape. I'm going to call myself Akamai Ma. I want to walk in like a superhero because I don't know how to get people to take me seriously. Because when people think of a garden, typically they think of maybe a 6x4 box in their yard where they're going to grow lettuce and tomatoes and maybe a little bit of basil or something. And they'll have a nice salad and a little bit of a spice rack there. And maybe they'll spend $300-$400 on it and they'll feel like they've splurged. While how much do they spend on health insurance? You know, I know my health insurance bill, and that I don't even get to use it, you know, is about $6,000 a year. And that's not my children. So if people decided to make food insurance and they dedicated their yard to not being a little farm, but to being a yarden. It's not a micro farm. It is edible landscaping. So my trees give food. My shrubbery gives food. Even the grass that I mow is filled with medicine. That volunteers in my yard, but I'm walking on gloticola and plantain. I don't know all the English names for some of these things. We have Hawaiian names for all of them, but I have a very medicinal lawn, and that volunteered. But so everything has got a purpose, and another element of permaculture is I don't argue with the yard very much. Like, I have these borders around the edges, and I throw seeds in that I like to begin with, or I might have tried to plant it a certain way, but I allow my plants to go through the entire cycle. They go all the way through to death. They throw out their seeds, and they move themselves around. You can really take a lot of management on your property, and you can think about plant rotation, and I'll go to these classes and they have all these technical skills and I don't even know what half the plants are called, but I know what they taste like, or I know how they will heal a wound. We have probably at least 150 different varieties of plants that have beneficial use. And, you know, if you allow nature to reign, and if they get in the wrong place, they're going to get run over with the lawnmower, you know. But mostly all my weeds are other medicinals. My comfrey's out of control. My lemongrass is out of control. The lima beans are out of control. So is the lily koi. I have 4 racks of bananas hanging in my garage, so that's like probably close to 300 bananas right now. I have a guy who drives bananas. He's going to come over tonight and buy a couple whole racks of those and put them in his business, you know. I share them out with the juice person, you know. I could make money. I do more trade, but I just share it out anyway. So that works well. I'd like to make mention of my chickens. I don't eat them. I'm not really a very natural predator, but we eat the eggs all the time. And we could eat the chickens. We have an 1,100-gallon tilapia pond that's rainwater-fed. It's about 2.5 feet below ground, about 2.5 feet above ground. And it's very passive. I have a bubble stone in there. But I have a passive way of draining the bottom of the pond, you know, where I water other plants with the, you know, the, you know, animal, the fish poo, basically. I can do the same thing with my turtle pond. And I'm careful, you know, like direct waste would be something that goes more like on the grass or on the trees. I'm not going to put that right on top of kale. Mm-hmm. But there's worms everywhere. When the trees lose their leaves, I allow them to fall below the tree. When I trim the branches, we, you know, kind of break it up, but we put it all around underneath different trees. Sometimes I move the branches to different trees, but those keep the ground wet. I have sweet potatoes all over the place. That's like living mulch. And I have so many bananas. I planted 8 banana trees, and I probably have 50 at least 2 years later, and I cut them down all the time. But those banana stalks, it's about 200 pounds of potassium and water, you know, that sit. I put those along my borders of my food forest, and they just leak in. So if my yard gets shaggy, you know, I haven't mowed it for a while or something, it might look a little bit shaggy, but then they just mow it and it looks fine. I mean, I really don't work very hard. That's what I like, too, because I'm busy doing other things, like being on the radio. Something.
Well, I think we're going to take a brief break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk more about what your vision is in creating this and assisting others to do something similar. So
okay.
we'll be back after a word from our sponsors.
Thank you.
Experiencing anxiety, anger, depression, or low self-esteem? Do you beat yourself up or sabotage what you truly want to achieve? Hi, this is Jeannie Smith, and at Open Heart Healing, I combine counseling, gestalt therapy, and Tai Chi energy work to assist those who truly desire to bring quality and joy back into their lives. My office is located on South Perry Street here in Castle Rock. Call me for a free consultation at 303-660-6373. Again, that's 303-660-6373, or visit me at openhearthealing.com.
Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the dolphins in the wild? This is Carol Gravey with Wild Dolphin Swim Adventures, and I just teamed up with Sharon Farrell of RockyMountainSacredJourneys.com. We're here to invite you on an amazing journey of self-discovery, fun, and adventure. Your adventure will include swimming with the wild dolphins, past life regression or Tai Chi energy treatment, gourmet organic meals, and much, much more. To find out about our upcoming trip in October, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or call us at 415-302-7100. Again, that's 415-302-7100. Hope you can join us. Mahalo.
Hello and welcome back to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gravey, and I'm here with Matt Spaeth, my co-host, and we're talking with Felicia Alonji and her project, Akamai Backyard. It's an inspiring project, and I want to hear more about how you created the film and what your vision is for assisting others to create similar projects in their backyards.
Well, when we created the film, we definitely created the film to inspire other people. That was absolutely our objective. We have been really grateful to see that at least our Google Analytics tell us that about 100,000 viewings at least of our website. Our website opens with the film, and we've been able to show it in a number of different places. But when we thought about making the film, we had a film instructor, and our art teacher helped us make our website. But we wanted to talk in joy. That was the big thing. We wanted to share a story of joy. The kids really don't even know how to relate to heavy fear or anger. They can find those feelings, but that's really not where they're at. And we had fun doing it, and I think what we started with was the music. We have four artists, that would be Jackson Brown, Jack Johnson, Ben Harper, Hoppe, and John Cruz, actually, so five, we utilized their songs, and they were very supportive of that, and we thought about what kind of music we wanted to have, and, you know, it's interesting, how do you tell a story, and how do you tell it in a way where you don't tire out your audience, and how do you help them to know that they can do it, or help them to think that they want to do it? That's a very big thing, and we really wanted to emphasize and honor the people in our Hawaiian community that we study with a lot, and the Hawaiians were masters at land management, and you know, their kapu system, their law system, it placed the spirituality of the land almost above human life, at a minimum equal to human life. And so it's so core and so central in what they do, in how they take care of the land. Aina means land, but it's I is food, you know, and so it's that which feeds. And so, you know, we took our lesson that we had found collectively, and even like when we were talking about the negative, we couldn't figure out how to put it in there and have that eclipse the message of joy. So we just wrote it, you know, in a scene that we have Jackson Brown's song playing for. And so we hope that it would motivate people. We've been surprised to see that it's watched far more in other places in the world than it is Hawaii. We were trying to most closely address our community because we felt like they have it the easiest. We can see from the analytics thing that at least at one point over 145 countries had watched it, and there's a total of 193 in the world. So that's kind of a fun way of looking at geography. And when we would see places like one month, Hungary was our number two viewer, and our longest viewing average ever is in the Arab world. So we thought, wow, we look at what they have to deal with there, and why would they even want to watch our film? You know, we have it so easy, and those people are really have to survive hard on pretty dry land. So, in fact, Saudi Arabia, the Arab Peninsula, is where we had the longest viewings. So it was a good way to be learning a little bit about the world, and what I know our narrow vision, right in our own community on our island, is to get as many people to be growing as much food as possible. Before World War II, we exported food, but we were food self-sufficient. Actually, during the gold rush, Hanalei, you know, exported rice and citrus to California. That, to me, is pretty amazing little factoid. And so we want to get back to that, and it's a little bit harder than I would have thought to get people to do it. I felt like, gosh, it's so easy. Why doesn't everybody do it? Everybody is doing it to some degree, just not going crazy with it. How's it in your area?
Well, I think permaculture's, you know, in my community of friends, people understanding it and wanting to learn more about it and do it. But, you know, sometimes I say that word, you know, to people and they're like, huh, what is that? So, you know, I think it's just an educational process that, you know, people are going to really learn more about as our food becomes, you know, more contaminated and you know, with GMOs and pesticides, that more people are wanting to figure out how to grow their own. Matt, what did you have to say?
Well, I was going to say that it seems that there's the people that are awakening are awakening ever more increasingly, and increasing their efforts to grow their own food and educate themselves about permaculture and gardening. And but then there's the other side of where people are continuing to become more asleep and more reliant on the system. So you see it going both ways, but it definitely is encouraging because I keep on meeting more and more people that are into gardening, and it's really fun to talk about.
Well, to the listener who's still going, well, I don't really get how permaculture works, a recommendation I would make, what town are you guys in?
Well, we're in, Matt and I are in two different areas, but, you know, we're 3 hours apart. But I live at about 8,500 feet. And Matt, what, you're in Boulder area, and what's your elevation there?
I'm at 6,800.
6,800.
And I've been integrating some permaculture techniques, and it's been fantastic. This has been my first year learning, and I haven't gotten to go to a course yet, but I've bought a whole bunch of DVDs from Jeff Lawton, and bought the Bill Mollison book. And it's just amazing. It's amazing watching these videos and seeing what you can do. And it's way better than just watching a normal movie.
A normal movie. And, like, you know, like Skeeter Pilarski, he lives up there in Okanagan area of Washington State. He's somebody who you could probably really get to come down and do some teaching. And there's a lot of people in Montana that seem to be doing quite a good job. But what I was going to say to the listener, if they live in the forested area, if you go into the mountains and you just sit in as much of a pristine area as you can find and just observe everything that is around you, and then sit in your same yard and notice the differences. You know, maybe sit in your yard, try and notice every little thing, then go to the forest and notice every little thing. Because what we have a habit of doing is trying to make things look clean, you know, like it's a mowed carpet or a swept floor. And, you know, if you have a tree, let those leaves stay on the ground below it. You want the organic mulch in there. You want all that. If you're mowing the lawn, make sure that the grass falls right back down, and minimize the amount of lawn that you have. But the more soil horizon you have is like how deep your roots are. So after a while, it's really easy. It just goes on autopilot. I think, like, for the reluctant permaculturist out there, I want you to think permaculture is an excuse to be lazy, both mentally and physically. You don't have to argue much with the land. And you might pay a little bit up front to have somebody come in if you don't have the time to do it, to set it up, to build up these areas that might need a little bit more organic matter. But then, like, I don't buy testing kits. I don't put, you know, emulsifiers on the soil. Or I know a lot of organic farmers, they'll put in, like, crushed oyster shell. And, you know, there's all these things, green sand, emerald green sand. There's a bunch of things that you can buy. But I don't even need to. And a lot of times, like, in my community, where I joke with my permaculture friends, they don't like the chickens, they don't like, you know, this animal, that animal, they keep everything all clean. In fact, the Food Security Act, boy, SB 510, that's pretty gnarly. They're basically outlawing nature. It's outlawing nature.
But
I was just, like, almost ready to have an ulcer over it when I saw that come forward, because that, when they separate animals, and I'm not, you know, even like toddlers, really, right? When they separate animals from the land, that is somebody who's legislating it, either who is mean-spirited or who knows nothing about nature. Because even like, for example, we have a black fly larva area. Black fly larvae, they will take care of anything that's dead in just a couple of days. It just cleans it all up. You need all those pieces in nature. It's like if you picture the circle of life and you made, you know, an arrow piece from the water, like, you know, is in the textbook, and you decide you're going to erase half of it, and it's still somehow supposed to work. You need the animals in it. That's my opinion. You know, there are, it's like nature is not a vegetarian. It just isn't, you know. The land eats the animals. the animals eat the plants, the plants eat the animals that the land ate. You know, it's got to go full cycle. And I'm not saying everybody has to have a whole bunch of animals in their yard, but like if are you, I don't think you're allowed to catch water in Colorado. Is that correct?
Yeah, you are.
In some areas you can. It kind of varies depending on what you're going to use it for.
Mm-hmm. I went to Mancos High, by the way. Do you guys know where that is? Mancos. It's right at the bottom of Mesa Verde. We weren't allowed to hold the water. I was actually born in Colorado, so I have a little bit of knowledge of that area.
Mm.
But when you have water catchment, put fish in there, put plants in there, then you have what's called bio-nutritious water. You know, and then you hold that, and, you know, any of those pieces, you know, it's good to be conscious of not mixing, say, direct chicken poop and lettuce. But that's what makes it so easy to all the animals. I really, you know, I have friends. I want to give a shout out if any of my friends are listening that have helped me in the yard. And that's like especially things like taking down heavy banana trees. You know, the harvest project is sometimes a harder part of it. But I have a lot of perennials in the yard. It shouldn't have to take too much work. There's a difference between market gardening, where maybe you want all your eggplant right in a row, all your lettuce right in a row, so that you know exactly what you have and you're able to do it on demand. But for the home domestic gardener, you know, invite plants into the yard that you like to eat, but, you know, it's sort of like that Stephen Stills song, love the one you're with, you know. Eat the plant that wants to feed you, you know. Like here, we have for our starches, sweet potatoes, that's a really easy one. Kahlo or taro, that's different than what they have on the mainland. Cassava, which is also known as yucca, that is a, like 100 pounds of root on a single plant the size of a papaya. That's the second largest starch in the world. We have that. We have breadfruit. We have another really huge corn called uhi. It's like a Hawaiian yam. And you just need to learn to eat a little bit differently. Even just grow it. So if you have to eat it, then eat it. But when you use different herbs and things, you can really spice things up and make them very interesting. We do a lot of like Thai spicing because, and Italian spicing. I'm Italian, so I definitely gravitate towards that. But we have a lot of Asian spices. There's, you know, you just spice it up a little bit. Coconut milk, that's not something you guys have there. But, you know, you have other things. You have things that we don't grow. Like, we have a hard time growing garlic. We have a hard time growing a russet potato, you know, a regular potato. But don't be picky, you know, and don't put picky plants in. Put plants in that will, each year that they're alive, they'll start giving you more and more. There's bushes that are basically salads. Do either one of you have a garden?
Both of us are starting one this year. I am in the process of finishing up my greenhouse, and I just have potted plants for the most part and a few boxes that will be raised bed type situations. But, you know, it's been a whole learning process for me, and I'm excited to learn more and see how long I can extend the growing season here, because we have a rather short growing season at 9,000 elevation. I mean, we're already, okay, it's August 16th, and the temperatures up here are dipping into the 40s already. And
yeah.
I know that the, you know, especially like the tomato plants and things like that, I'm going to have to really hurry on my greenhouse because I'm going to be bringing these all into my house at night, you know, because I don't want.
So, you know. What are the Indians? Is that like mostly like Arapaho? Who lives right near where you did? Is it Ute?
It was the Ute.
Have you consulted with the Ute? Have you looked at what they did? I mean, I'm sure they were pretty heavy hunters.
But I think that's a great idea.
I think every place needs to really turn around and respect their elders, And I lived in southern Colorado and more close to Arizona, but all of those people, they had it figured out. Looked to what they ate. Looked at, you know, for the biggest, strongest staples. And, you know, invite them forward, you know, find a way to learn with them. And also, like on the internet, there are some really, on YouTube, there's some great video footage. I'm just in awe of what people like in Michigan, like anymore, I don't do winter. I've lived here my whole adult life, and I find I don't like to be cold. But these people, they'll have like a hoop house, and they'll have chickens in there, and then they'll have also a composting area. And that compost, the heat of the compost, keeps the inside of that hoop house warm. And so it actually, you can grow quite a lot more things. And then my other experience is that try your best to not disconnect your plants with the true earth. You know, if you have potted plants, make sure there's big holes in the bottom of it where it's touching the ground, because that micro herd, your mycelium, your worms, and your microbes, you need those to be going back and forth, back and forth. What the mycelium does, what the mycelium is like a network. It's their flower is mushrooms, and they can last for acres, and they're smart. And so when they see there's a whole lot of nitrogen in one area of the soil, Paul Stamets, who's from Washington State, he's an expert on this, and so I've read his book. So I'm just telling you, I'm a little bit ignorance on fire. I'm just learning, but I'm no expert. But when you have the mushrooms under the ground, the mycelium, they pull what's needed from one area of your yard and move it to another area of what's needed in your yard.
Hmm. Well, okay, we're gonna have to take another brief break to listen to our sponsors, and we will be right back.
Okay.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm a health fanatic. I admit it. I read all the labels, eat organic food, and I'm very aware of what I put into my body. I practice holistic health, use alternative healing products, and never miss my daily dose of Willard Water. Willard Water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly two dozen trace minerals that are essential to maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Simply adding a quarter capful of Willard Water to my tea makes a tremendous impact on my overall well-being. Willard Water is tasteless and odorless. Dr. Willard's patented catalyst helps our bodies better absorb the minerals and nutrients we need to maintain optimal health. If you care about your health, you'll try Willard Water today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Hi everyone, this is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Acira bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240. Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We're talking with Felicia Elongi about Akamai Backyard and permaculture. And creating, turning your yard into a, what she calls a yarden, where you are growing everything in harmony with nature and just growing the foods that work well with wherever you live. So, and I think that's
with
the
low energy inputs, which is the coolest thing.
So, we're lucky for that. Very low inputs, everything pretty much right there. The sun that shines down and the rain that falls down and the organic material that falls down. What do you think your listeners would probably most need to know?
Well, I, you know, obviously, well, our listeners are an international audience, so while we do have a lot of listeners, majority from Colorado, they are all from all over the world, and I guess for people to get started, they would really just like to maybe pick up some books, maybe pick up some DVDs. What do you have any recommendations about some more further educational resources that people could look up themselves?
Well, my number one way, other than the internet, let me say the internet, you know, you can look on the internet. There's so much on YouTube and on our website, Akamai Backyard, AKAMAI Backyard, BACKYARD.com. We have a whole resources page that brings you on to a lot of other websites, other films. There's a lot of pieces on there. There's a Getting Started page that we have. But you can also, if you're on the line, on web, you could say Google permaculture, and then I will put your community. Because that is something that's moving around more and more. And again, it is not really a new way of doing things. It's a rediscovering of old ways of doing things. So even if you don't have people doing it the new way, look for people who still know how to do it the old way. So in the United States, those would typically be the Native American population that is there, or the people, the communities that have lived in whatever region you're from for a very long time, you know, and older people. And even when you look at historical type of documents, you're going to see what kind of foods that they had and how they lived their lives, even in museums and stuff, because you have to remember all this industrial agriculture is really post-World War II. You know, I'm sure you might have listeners who have stronger knowledge on this, and certainly for their regions, but 100 years ago, food wasn't shipped very far. So fortunately, we just have to really reach back more to our grandparents and our great-grandparents' generation than that knowledge isn't still there somewhere. But the most thing I would say is to pretend in your mind like you couldn't go to the store. What is right there in your yard? Now, if you have just an absolutely mown lawn, you're going to be bringing in green waste. But whoever's doing landscaping, they have green waste all over the place. Cardboard is also a very good element. You know, try and envision making your yard be a forest floor. And that's, you know, it's a sort of an intuitive thing. Don't let anybody make you feel like your own inner knowledge isn't quite enough. But what I think of the number one step is to deciding that creating your own food is really important. Now, many people live in apartment buildings, or maybe they have condos, or they might live someplace where it's not so easy. Maybe they don't have enough sun. There are really interesting aquaculture projects, aquaponics, and you could do that. You don't, you know, if you're on a tall building, you want to put a really heavy fish pond right out on your porch, but you can do vertical stacking up above it. There's some amazing, this is where the internet's really pretty amazing what's out there right now. If you do searches on aquaponics and on aquaculture, and you can do microsystems, usually there are YouTube videos available for those things. And people are quite creative. I want to mention another site that's very good. It's called urbanfarmguys.com. And they're in Kansas City. And that's about a bunch of families who have reclaimed an area that was deemed urban blight. And actually, my nephew is doing that in Oakland right now. There are places that you can reclaim, and a lot of times there's city grants that will help you do it. And you can work right in town. I mean, this is all, everything, I live in a regular neighborhood, in a very fertile area, but it's a regular neighborhood. It's a flat piece of land. It's just a house on a third of an acre. And you can do this in cities. And, you know, anytime you have water coming off your roof, I do realize, though, that there are many states, I think 11, that don't allow you to collect rainwater. So you might have to find out about that or grow a big plant around it. I don't know. but, you know, I mean, it's, you know, you are returning the water right back to the ecosystem. You're holding it for a little bit. You're slowing it down. You're not stealing it. So when the water comes off your roof, it's sitting there, and it's slowly being what waters your yard, it's still going to go back to wherever it was. And my water catchments, by the way, are just ensconced in plants, in and out. I have a little fish in there. You know, my big one, I have the tilapia. But they eat the mosquitoes. You know, it's just like happiness all over the yard. It really is. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Your yard looks beautiful. It looks like an amazing place to live. And the before and after pictures are really great to watch and really inspiring. Because your yard goes from what looks like an average yard into a abundant, beautiful, beautiful garden that looks like a great place to hang out in.
Thank you. And there's an update film, and it shows how much more it grew in a year. This Akamai Backyard update on YouTube. And then right now, oh my goodness, I tell you, in 5 years, you're going to want to say, what's going on there? Because where's the house? I mean, everything is growing really abundantly. My trees, you know, I'm eating fine without much productivity on my trees. I'm finally really having mango and avocado, and I have my first citrus on my tangerines and orange trees, my egg fruit. A lot of these haven't even begun to produce yet. The guava hasn't, the long gones.
Wow.
You know, you have to keep your plants dwarfed. Mm. But I have a cotton tree. That's pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like soon you're going to be you're going to be producing more food than you're going to be able to consume.
Oh, I'm long since past that. Long since past
that. Oh,
that's
great.
I give it away constantly. Yeah, long since past more than I can consume.
Well,
I can imagine if just a few more people were doing that and then just continued, pretty soon we'd have way more food than the entire world could eat.
That's right. And then people that are, I'd like to see Kauai grow a little bit more, because what if Oahu gets hungry, right? Where we have a lot of concentration, you know, the outer areas need to grow a lot of food. So what if Denver gets hungry, you know?
Yeah.
We got to take care of each other. That's the other thing that I really feel like. Sometimes I watch survivalist blogs or something. I'm not anywhere near wanting to go out and buy guns or something like that. I'm
right.
So unwilling to harm my neighbor. I'm all about sharing, and you know, they could have it long before I would ever have a desire to hurt someone. And I think generosity is the key. You know, I really think
that's a great mentality to have. You know, right now in Boulder, we're having a big debate about whether or not to let GMOs be grown on Boulder County open land. And, you know, for us, it's a no-brainer. I mean, we see what GMOs do and what commercial agriculture does to the soil. And they keep coming and saying, oh, well, the population is just going to keep growing and we're going to need to feed the world. But you look at what all of those technologies are doing to the soil, and they're completely depleting it more and more every year. And what I really love about permaculture is that it makes the soil more healthy every year.
More healthy and so much more abundant, because you have stacking of food. It's not just one crop. It's crop above crop above crop. So your density has got so much more potential than GMO. You know, Kauai is the headquarters of a lot of the GMO industry in terms of their planting. So it's like kind of like, Syngenta, Monsanto, and Pioneer Seed Corn are all very dominant on the west side of our island. It's the other side of the mountain, so we don't have them blowing this stuff here. But
That's good.
There's a film a British person just put out. It's Farmer to Farmer. It's on YouTube. It's about, I'm just trying to see if I can find it here really quick. It's about 20 minutes long, but I thought that was a good one. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did watch that. I did watch that trailer.
It goes around and talks, and it shows, like, at a very practical, pragmatic level. It's called GM Crops, Farmer to Farmer, on YouTube. And it's people just explaining how they had a pretty good yield the first year or two, and then it started going down from there. India is an extreme example where they've had a lot of problems with that.
I saw that they just...
You saw it?
You know what? We just lost Matt. So
I see that we're almost at the top of the hour. And,
we are. And I just really want to thank you for all this wonderful, I don't even want to call it work, because it seems like more like play.
Yes, it's like a song. It's like a poem.
Yeah,
it's like living a poem.
And especially, you know, working with the children and teaching the children about, you know, growing your own food and being respectful of the land. And we just appreciate that so much. So, again, thank you. Matt, are you back on?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
Well, it's my joy. And thank you for allowing us to share our story with the world.
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful story. It's inspirational, and I think that you will inspire other people to do the same. And I'm excited about your suggestion to talk to the Utes. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, really find your traditional people.
Yeah,
you know, of each era.
Right.
So say aloha.
Aloha, and thank you very much, and keep up all the wonderful things that you're doing, and we'll keep tabs on what you're doing and maybe have you back on the show and a year from now and see how you're progressing.
Yeah, anytime. I'm glad to, and I'm going to be following you guys online. So great.
Okay. And you have been listening to Food Integrity Now. You can go to our website, foodintegritynow.org. We have all of our shows archived on there that you can download or listen to, and plus a lot of interesting articles. So thank you again for listening, and we will be back next week.
Okay, and I better go because I got my show now.
Thank you.
Linda Masterson, Soul Purpose Astrologer, works with astrological tools and with guides in the non-physical to assist ones in knowing their soul purpose. Important in this process is identification of significant blockages. In each session, tools are provided for working with self to clear resistance and free talents, skills, and abilities to fuller expression. The goal is to take responsibility for and to accelerate the healing process. Phone sessions are offered by Linda. Please visit Linda at lindamasterson.com or call 808-651-0307. Again, that's 808-651-0307.